From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. In Bristol Bay, herring biologists are predicting a May fishery. Chemical oil spill dispersants are better for birds than they are for fish. And speaking of oil spills, vessel owners and crews around South Central Alaska get certified each year in spill drill training. We'll tell you what's involved and how to get involved. And finally, we have a report on the first ever Bristol Bay Fish Expo. Those stories and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report right after this.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
The Togiak herring fishery is the biggest in the state, and fishermen are waiting to see if the herring will be ready to harvest the end of this month or the first part of May. The Department of Fish and Game flew an aerial survey on Monday looking for signs of herring bound for Togiak. The department said none were seen, nor were there any sea lions or many birds that might indicate herring beneath the surface. Last year's Togiak fishery, by far the largest of its kind in the state, started record early after fish and spawn were spotted unexpectedly on April 14th. ADF&G still thinks this year's fishery will happen in the first part of May, with an estimated 23,000 tons available for harvest. Last year, Yukon River subsistence fishermen got their first chance to target king salmon since 2012. More of the same might occur this year, as preseason projections for the 2017 Yukon King run suggest a slight improvement over last year. As KIYU's Tim Bodoni reports, a project that studies young salmon as they are heading out to sea is helping managers get a clearer picture of future salmon runs.
Since 2003, Dr. Katie Howard from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and her crew of researchers have operated small mesh trawl surveys in between St. Lawrence Island and the Yukon Delta, catching several hundred young salmon of various species. Through genetic testing, researchers are able to determine where the fish are from. Most juvenile salmon caught are just emerging from the rivers to spend their first winter at sea, and most come from the Yukon River drainage. Howard reports that the offshore sampling project has measured an increased abundance of juvenile Yukon River king salmon since 2013, and that bodes well for king returns starting this summer.
Those fish that we first saw in 2013, those should be coming back to the river as six-year-old fish this year. And so we're expecting approximately between 90,000 and 130,000 Canadian origin Chinook to the Yukon.
Combined with kings bound for spawning grounds in the American part of the drainage, the overall Yukon king run this year should be slightly larger than last year's, when an estimated 177,000 kings made it past the pilot station sonar, the largest estimate since 2009. Using the juvenile offshore sampling data, Howard has been able to generate a king salmon run forecast for each run since 2013, and the actual runs have fallen within the range of her predictions each year except 2015. Howard explains that her run predictions seem to be working well because they gather data at a critical point in the life cycle of a salmon.
It's at a point that's after whatever it is that's happening that's causing good abundance versus bad abundance is occurring. So what we're seeing when we measure these fish in September of their first year in the ocean is that after that point, marine survival is pretty stable from year to year to year. So it's about 5% tend to survive and come back to the river.
Department of Fish and Game Yukon River summer season manager Holly Carroll says that the juvenile sampling data helps fine-tune the traditional forecasts derived from escapement estimates, which might predict a fairly wide range of potential outcomes.
The last few years, the juvenile forecast has kind of come in a little higher than our forecast. And that just sort of tells us that it's a good indication that we may be looking at seeing the upper end of our forecast range.
Though she's encouraged by the upward trend that the juvenile sampling project is suggesting for the next few Yukon King runs, Carol remains cautious and doesn't want to reorient the official run forecast upwards.
It just kind of keeps people remembering that these runs are still half the size they used to be, that we are still in conservation mode, and while there may be just a little bit of subsistence harvest, we're not out of the woods yet.
This year, subsistence fishermen on the Yukon should expect a similar management strategy as last year, according to Carol. In Galena, this is Tim Bodoni.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans.
Meanwhile, the pink salmon disaster last year ate into the profits for fishermen and processors in the Gulf of Alaska, and the Kodiak area is still waiting to see if it'll receive emergency relief funds. Kayla DeRoche has more from Kodiak.
At a fisheries work group meeting last week, fisheries analyst Heather McCarty touched on a letter some legislators, including Senator Dan Sullivan and Representative Don Young, had addressed to the Committee on Appropriations, asking them to include the funds for community relief in the budget. The pink salmon disaster is one of nine other commercial fishery failures listed in that letter. A separate document graphs the season's financial impact on harvesters based on a five-year pre-disaster average and the damage done in 2016. For Kodiak, the impact was roughly $13,663,000. McCarty said getting disaster funding is a long process and an uncertain one.
We were told at one point that by the federal lobbyist for the city and borough, that sometimes people try to tack on to a really big disaster like a hurricane or something to try to get sort of an omnibus disaster funding request through the Congress. So there might be money in your future, but I don't know exactly what it's going to look like.
Assemblyman Larry Ledoux said that, according to the D.C. lobbyist, the legislators on the Appropriations Committee might not treat this case as an urgent one. I'm Kayla DeRoche.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
After an oil spill, one way crews clean up is with chemical dispersants, and that substance could hurt marine life, even if it helps birds and other affected animals. The Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council has been researching those effects and were to present some of their findings at the Kodiak Area Marine Science Symposium held late this week. Lisa Matlock, Outreach Coordinator for the Council, says a dispersant is an emulsifier, like Joy soap, combined with a solvent that breaks the oil slick down into smaller droplets.
It's a controversial form of oil spill response because you're adding a chemical on top of that oil spill, and you're breaking up in theory so that the bacteria that naturally eat oil will have more smaller droplets available for getting that oil out of the system, but it can cause its own long-term problems.
She says they'll talk about a project they worked on with NOAA, which examined the impact of oil and dispersed oil on Pacific herring and pink salmon.
Very little research on dispersants have been done on Alaska fish species. This is one. And so looking at what the effects are, and the effects in parts per billion, very small amounts, can cause major damage to the hearts of fish, which can make them less able to compete out there in the ocean.
At the same time, the dispersants help other animals the oil spill has endangered.
So if you're a bird, a seabird, or a marine mammal like a seal, dispersants are kind of your friend, because they're breaking up that slick on the surface, which means you're less likely to get oil in your fur and your feathers. That's one of the reasons that dispersants will be used, is to protect those species. If you're a fish, it's a different story.
Matlock says part of the presentation is about how they're trying to improve the situation through policy changes. Speaking of oil spills, if you live in one of the communities downstream from Prince William Sound, you may have noticed groups of vessels that were practicing oil spill cleanup techniques in your local bays. Spill drill training occurs each year in communities around South Central Alaska. The training program was developed in the aftermath of the Exxon Valdez spill. It provides a well-trained fleet of vessels that are ready to react in case of an oil spill. Kate Dugan is the Valdez Community and Public Relations Manager for Alyeska Pipeline Services Company. She explains the annual drills train more than 2,000 crew members on 450 boats all around Prince William Sound and Southeast Alaska.
They have 2 days of on-land training where they're in their classroom getting their HAZWOPR certificate or other, I think there's a few other classroom classes, and then they head out to get some hands-on experience with our equipment, whether that's our skimmer systems or our power packs, which power the skimmers. And then on the third day, they head out on the water and have some kind of drill where they form up into task forces. I've been on a SANR task force leader watching him. He was in the program. It was out of Cordova. He's in the program for, you know, over 20 years, and watching him kind of corral the new gill netters in the fleet. It was really interesting.
Dugan says this year's training is for vessels and crews that will be certified to work on call next year.
A unique crew member is only trained once a year.
Alyeska must maintain a certain number of qualified vessels at all times in case of an oil spill or related disaster. Dugan says fishermen or others with vessels who are interested in being a part of the program can check Alyeska's website for more information.
It depends on the port. We have a fishing vessel administrator in each community, a contractor who kind of manages the fleet in the individual communities. I know in some communities there's a wait list and in others there is not. But they can actually, on our external website, there is a contact to call if captains are interested in joining the program.
Kate Dugan with the Alyeska Pipeline Services Company. And finally this week, a report on a new event in Bristol Bay to help raise money for a NACNIC daycare. Mary Patterson has more.
Fishermen and the merchants who target them will have a chance to talk shop and shop in NACNIC this summer, just ahead of the fishing season, at a new event being billed as the first ever Bristol Bay Fish Expo. Katie Copps Wilson is helping organize the event and says it is modeled after the Pacific Marine Expo in Seattle.
A lot of the locals can't afford to go to the Pacific Marine Expo, one, as visitors, or two, as being able to afford a booth down there. And so that's our hope, is to provide that place for the little guys to come and advertise their wares and still have the same market available.
Several vendors like Homer's Nomar have already signed up. The two-day expo takes place June 9th and 10th in the Bristol Bay Rural School in NACNIC.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Dave Benninger at KDLG in Dellingham, Tom Bedoni at KIYU in Galena, and Kayla DeRoche and Mary Patterson here at KMXT in Kodiak. As always, a big thank you to everyone who helps make this program possible each week, including our listeners. From KMXT in Kodiak, I am Maggie Wall.